session number 18470, Reel 2.
Mr. Sal, Reel 2.
As we got near the bank the other side, the shells were landing on the bank. Two or three places in front of me, one of our platoon was hit in the stomach with shrapnel. Jake Mutt's name, I've met him since, so he did survive. One or two went to help him, but they were told to move on and leave it to the medics. We moved on up the bank onto this road, and each side of the road were Korean bodies piled, really piled, burnt out vehicles. This must have been caused from shelling from the Americans. Apparently an American reconnaissance platoon had crossed the river. Three tanks had got across on a ferry, which had then broken down, so there was just the three tanks across. They'd moved on up the road to this small village, and they'd then been pinned down, and we were to go to their aid. I can't remember how long it took us to get to this position. When we got there, we were told that we were to take two hills. These two hills were each side of the river, and it was the road went across the river, crossed it at an angle, and it was a ford. It wasn't a bridge. It was too, you could ford it. It was only sort of knee deep in the river, quite wide, but only knee deep. There was a hill on one side. In fact, there was two hills on one side, which the Middlesex Regiment were to take. I think they named one of them Pudding Hill afterwards, and then they named the other one Middlesex Hill. They took these hills successfully. We were to take the hill on the left of the river. We were to take it the next morning. So the next morning, we crossed the river carrying the mortar barrels and, you know, well laden down. We skirted round this rather smaller hill that was terraced into a small valley, and there we set up our mortars. Meanwhile, the rifle companies were approaching the hill. It's not too clear, but I can remember we... Four of the mortars were set up. There were six mortars. Four were set up to give covering fire. But the riflemen moved in just after it got light, caught the Koreans unaware, and by 9 o'clock, about an hour later, they'd consolidated on the hill. And we, with some covering fire from us, to the rear side there, and we couldn't see the enemy from where we were, but apparently they said later that it was quite successful what we'd done. And we thought, well, that's it, you know. But about 9 o'clock that morning, Koreans started to infiltrate back onto the hill, and there was quite a few wounded. Had to job get the wounded away, and we started firing again. But there were so many casualties that the second in command, which made him go, went through our position and took command of the two companies, what was left of the two companies. But still, they started to infiltrate more, and they began to mortar our position. There was some shell fire, not too much, and we were number two and three section mortars were firing. Our section was set up that wasn't firing, and apparently there was something wrong with the signalling equipment, and they asked, I think four or five of us, to go back round the hill, across the river, to get some signalling equipment. By this time there was a fair bit of motoring across this ground we had to go to. So we went back, four or five of us, got back okay, across the river, got the equipment, started coming back, and mortar fire got quite heavy. There was some shell fire. We thought if we moved against this terraced hill, we'd get protection from the shell fire. And we moved to the terraced hill. We went up, these terraces were about 5 foot high, about 5 foot wide, where they cultivated. We went up about the third terrace, and we were sort of running at a crouch along this terrace. We heard this swishing noise, and we knew it was mortar bombs. So we sort of hit the ground, and a salvo of mortar bombs exploded all around us. By some miracle, they either landed on the terrace above us and the terrace below us. And although we were shelled in bricks, soil and stones, no one was injured. Got back to the mortar position. I thought, bit of relief here, but there was still mortar fire from the enemy. As we got back there, our section was called to action with the other two mortars. Ran to the mortar, and they weren't bedded in. If you don't bed a mortar in the first bomb, what happens? The bomb goes almost straight up, because the power sends it down. The bomb comes up, comes back down on you. And I can remember this, but it's clear as anything. I was number two that keeps the mortar level and throws bombs down. Levels the mortar, throws bombs down. I picked up the mortar and noticed that the, what they call spring drill three, the number three on the mortar, has to lift the spring off so that the barrel can bed itself in without pulling it up, you see. This hadn't been done. It was the number one's job to say spring drill three for the number three to do this. We hadn't done it, but I managed. I noticed it and called out, and we were now under quite heavy mortar fire, actually. But fortunately, it was sort of 40 or 50 yards from us. And I don't know how long we were firing. I just concentrated on what I was doing and tried not to think of what else was happening, but the noise was tremendous. And then there was a bit of a lull. We stopped firing. Really, the next thing I can remember was about midday, a spotter plane came over. American spotter plane, buzzing around over the hill. Apparently it was calling in an airstrike because we was taking so many casualties. From the right of the hill, this American jet came screaming in. Watched as a canister fell from the plane, and then another. Hit the top of the hill, spewed out and bounced, spewed this burning napalm across the hill. Then another jet, doing the same thing. They circled round, came in again, firing rockets, machine gunning. for thinking, poor bastards, whoever they are. Not till later that we realised they'd been bombing our own troops. Although aircraft recognition panels had been put out, could see them now, clear as anything. There was two companies on the hill, I think it was P and C company, understrength companies really. Probably 150 men. We learned later there was 127 casualties. Major Muir took command of, was about 30 men left. He realised that the Koreans hadn't taken advantage of this. So he led the men back, encouraged the men back up the hill, take the hill again. More casualties were taken. Major Muir was killed, so they had to withdraw from the hill. Came back to us. A lot of them burnt, badly burnt. Helicopters landed just behind our position. Take off the wounded. They took off some. Then shelling started again. Helicopters took off, leaving stretcher bearers to move the wounded. And can't remember much else after that afternoon. I can remember the platoon commander said to me, bring your brain gun, so follow me. Followed him up this dirt track. He was about 6'6", I could hardly keep up with him. I think he was going to an O group. This was a meeting of officers. He had this meeting, we came back along this road. Same dirt track, and there was clearing mines from it. Don't know how we missed them. It's a miracle, really. We were told then that we were to stay there the night. We didn't know what was happening on the hill by this time. Apparently the machine gun platoon, which was to our right, had seen Koreans moving on the mortar platoon's left flank there, firing across the top of us. They beat them back. That night we dug in bottom of the hill. There's none of our troops on the hill at this time. Stood to most of the night. These three tanks that had crossed the river, as I said about earlier, they lined up, I suppose, 100 yards behind us. And they fired directly across us onto the lower slopes and the upper slopes of the hill. Most of the night, the noise was tremendous. I think the noise was just unnerving everyone. When a tank shell goes over the top of you, there's a tremendous crack and then the explosion. And after what had gone on earlier in the day, we weren't very confident in their shooting. I can remember in the little slit trench that I'd done, the number two on the brain. We just stood there, brain gun in the shoulder, imagining all sorts of movements in front of us. When the morning came, with the Koreans had gone, the hill was deserted. That's really all I can remember of that incident. We were pulled out. of course, we had had reinforcements. I think we had a bit of a alarm then. I think just we got replacements from the Golden Highlanders, who had been in Germany at the time and been on their way here. And really, I can't really remember much that happened after that period, for that short time. I know we were told that we were to lead the advance, because at this time there'd been a landing of Marines at Imjin, and the Koreans were pulling back, and our battalion, our brigade in fact, was to lead the advance. An Australian battalion joined us, which made us the Middlesex, the Argylls and the Australians. They joined us, and we leapfrogged each other each day. Like, the Argylls would lead along the road, and then we would lead, and then the Australians would lead, take it in turns. North Koreans were bugging out this time, because they was getting cut off at the back by the landing at, no, it wasn't in, I can't remember the name of the place they landed anyway. And it was sort of long, move along the road, just dust roads. I mean, the brain gun carriers that we travelled in was just throwing up dust, red dust. I can remember that, covered everything. And you'd come under fire somewhere from the hills, and you'd stop, and there'd be a small action, and then you'd move on again. And that brigade, the 27 brigade, led the advance right up, almost to the Yellow River in the end. This was, well, sometime in November, probably by now. And we were told that the Chinese had said we want to go anywhere into North Korea. But we'd got right up quite close to the Yellow River.
What were conditions like on the advance?
Well, in all the time I was in Korea, I never slept anywhere other than on the ground in a slit trench. I can remember waking up sometimes in the early part of the autumn night with 2 or 3 inches of rain. I'd be sleeping in. Hot during the day, cold at night. And of course, as it got colder, the time we got up to, say, the Yellow River, we were told to dig in on the crest of this hill, and the entrenching tools wouldn't touch it. It was absolutely frozen, maybe 2 or 3 foot deep. Couldn't dig in at all. In fact, the only place we ever dug a mortar pit to put the mortars in was on the Nakhon. I remember throwing a cup of water against the side of a rain gun carrier one night, and before it reached the ground it had frozen. I didn't really feel the cold so much myself. Well, I felt it, but it didn't worry me a lot. At first we were still in Jungle Green, actually. In fact, they called us the Walls Brigade because of the lack of equipment we had. But, and I would sleep on perhaps two. We would sleep, put two blankets folded under us, because the cold from the ground was really worse than the cold from the top. Perhaps a blanket, overcoats, all the uniform, of course. Never took the boots off, because if you took your boots off, they would freeze outside the blankets, like. And we would have stag duty, of course. You'd be on stag 2 hours of four. Let's say overnight. Sometimes the brain gun carriers had to be warmed up to keep the engines from freezing up. Food wise, we were supplied by the Americans. Occasionally we got some British rations, but mainly it was combat rations from the Americans.
Did you do much fighting on the advance?
Not really, it was just more or less skirmishes. The North Koreans sort of realised that they couldn't hold the United Nations forces, and that they had a fighting retreat more or less. So it was just sort of I can remember we were going along this tall dirt tracks, and there was a precipice one side and hills up the other side, and we were going quite slowly along this in brain gun carriers. Stopped for a while, and some American black troops were moving along the road behind us looking for mines, clearing mines. They didn't find any. They jumped into a truck, passed us, came up to a bridge over this rather like a gorge with a river running underneath. As they got on the bridge, they came under fire. They jumped off the back of the truck, some of them jumped over into the river, onto the banks. It was quite comical, really. We didn't sort of hang around to see what happened after that. And it was that sort of an advance. Quite often we'd get a crash action from the carriers, that is, put the mortars up and fire ahead of us, like. This is how it was until we got to when the Chinese came in, really. Then we were told we was having to pull back. And that the brigade, 27th Brigade, would be the rear guard of the retreat, withdrawal or retreat, whatever I like to call it. We pulled back. I can remember crossing the Han River, it was frozen solid. I remember a little incident, we was waiting to move on, and the brain carriers were up close against each other. I was talking to one of my friends who was down at the back of my carrier, and the carrier I was in started up. Backed into him, squashed him between the two carriers as he was talking to me. Smashed his pelvis. He was screaming, "Straighten my legs, straighten my legs." So it wasn't really all enemy action that was stressful. It was all kinds of things. I remember coming round another bend in a hill, a dirt track. American tank, we didn't know it was an American tank, come belting up the other way. There was a precipice down one side and a hill up the other side. We was in the brain gun carrier. The tank came round the corner, saw us, slewed up the hill, come down, crashed against the side of our carrier, pushed the carrier right to the edge of the precipice, loaded with mortar bombs. Things like that, you know, it all adds to the stress. I can remember a place, Sarawan, taking the village, and we'd gone through to what they'd call consolidate it. We'd gone so far up the road there, we was told we'd come back. This was just the mortar platoon with two American tanks. Coming back along the road. Another road coming from another direction to join this road as it entered the village. Saw some Koreans, didn't realise who they were, coming down the other road. So we were coming back. We got close to them, we realised they were North Koreans. We thought, must be prisoners. Mingled amongst them in the little village there. Had the red star on the hat. They pointed at the tanks, because the tanks, American tanks with a white star on. They're saying, Ruskies, Ruskies. And we wore cat comforters, which was something like a Russian hat. And they're saying, Ruskies. They thought we were Russians. We thought they were Korean prisoners. And we was in amongst them. And we're trying to swap. They wanted badges off us, and we wanted. And we stopped in this square. Captain Ferry got to us, said, get back to your carrier. Didn't say why, just get back to your carrier. But we had tumbled by now that they were Koreans, North Koreans. Making our way back to the carrier, and this American sergeant on the tank grabbed a Korean rifle, wrong end, started pulling it away. Korean pulled the trigger, the sergeant fell. At the same time, on these tanks, what were called multiple machine guns, like four machine guns, one man firing, opened up this multiple. All hell broke loose then. Grenades were flying, small arms fire. We got back behind the carrier. I remember seeing the North Korean, he was a great big fella. Went to dive through the, because houses were only made of mud, wood, rice paper windows. Dived through this window, the phosphorus grenade hit him. And all of a sudden, no one to be seen. They'd all vanished in hills. We got into the carriers, bugged out of there, and apparently, just after that, the rifle company, A company, came through Sarawan, and these Koreans were sitting there with their hands on their heads in the village.
Korean soldiers?
Korean soldiers, North Korean soldiers. They took them prisoner. Peculiar circumstances of it. I can remember another time, don't know where it was, the Chinese were in the war then. We was in this village, we'd stayed in this village that night. Of course, the village had all deserted, no one was, everyone had bugged out more or less. And we had our mortars lined up in this road. And we knew the Chinese were near, and we were firing. And this was probably a northerly direction. And then we were told number one section had to go back. We could hear some shell firing behind us.